song cycles. And if I hadn't known that he has this extensive relationship within the community, how would I know?
If I didn't know, how would I know?
Yeah, it's like basically like you can always judge things by the, you know, a front view, but you can't tell just because of someone's face and their name what they, who they are, what they are. So you gotta ask. Yeah, I don't know.
If you know how to ask.
If you know how to ask, and so if you have the space to ask. And
I'm interested in, I read in a book about the Philippines that there was a long history of migration of Malay people and Indonesian people, but more so Malay people, just coming over and setting up and living in the Philippines, completely preceding the Spanish arriving. But the Spanish arrived for a little while, and that was also fine until they started treating it like a colonial outpost and wanting a census and wanting authoritarian rule. And I wonder if that's...
And fortifying their colonial outposts.
Yeah. And so I wonder about moving between countries and how some people manage to just go there and be there, and some people want to... By people, I mean a group of peoples.
I think also that the indigenous peoples in the south are Melanesian.
Of the Philippine Islands?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the south of the archipelago, and in eastern Indonesia are Melanesian.
Oh.
So it's not just West Papua, there's Maluku, there's Timor, Flores-Nora, and that's reaching into southern Philippines, which is kind of like, basically, that's also why I don't like using the term Pacific, because it's like, there's an idea of where it is, and that idea is incorrect.
It's and true. That, and
because every fucking border is porous.
Yes.
Nothing is ever neat and tidy. That's although, the border. The boundaries are only used... They're only useful for certain purposes.
There's a project I'm working on at the moment about the choreography of capital. And the thing that's really become apparent is that everything moves around the world at lightning speed like it never has before in history, except for populations.
Yeah.
That currency and commodities move like you wouldn't believe, like almost frictionlessly. And we still have crazy borders for people.
Yeah. And borders in places that never had borders.
Yeah, and until recently, borders.
Arbitrary borders. And
I think about that when you talk about different islands and regions around Melanesia, and then I think about different regions of what became Germany, or different regions of what became England, or, and then I imagine living in an Australia where our map is the indigenous map, and I imagine telling people that I am from a country that is not the continent.
And saying, oh, I was born in Niue country, and I grew up in Bundjalung country, and that's how I say it now, but for it to be a nation, and like to be legally, I guess, for that polity to be the structure, I thought about this too, and kind of where Queensland and Victoria mean the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
And there's a Victoria in Canada, and there's a Victoria in the Seychelles, and there's a Victoria in Fiji, and it's like, okay, like you, and in Mumbai, okay, great, like loved her, but like, you know, I don't see Thatcherville anywhere.
Thank the Lord.
All of the lords and lordresses. And like, it becomes this weird thing.
Oh, fine.
That, you know, there needs to be a lot of kind of rethinking of. And
I just feel like I could better represent myself when somebody asks me where I'm from. And that only comes back to wanting to accurately and proudly be a member of a people or a place.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of shit that's gone on in regions of Australia that that I don't identify with, that becomes my baggage.
Totally. And I feel the same in terms of kind of not purposely not wanting to be associated with a lot of these things, which it's not for me, but I've of course am benefiting from Empire by living here. And from what has happened prior to my arrival, prior to my parents' arrival, I didn't have a choice over where I was born, but I have to assume the consequences of that. And part of that for me is not saying, when I'm overseas, they say, where am I from? And I say, I'm Samoan. Because I got so sick of trying to explain that Australia isn't just white and black people, and that those terms are problematic in any way.
It was so crazy to me when I visited New York that it seemed like what is publicized is that America is white and black people.
And really...
And there's no discussion of the indigenous people.
Yeah.
Somehow... They don't even some minorities have a privilege over other minorities.
Yeah, absolutely. And every time there's a comparison between Aboriginal peoples here and Black Americans, it's like, you're not comparing the equivalent?
No. it's
First Nations peoples thing.
Have you seen on the front of the Australian passport the little emblem that looks like the Aboriginal
and
flag?
Everybody loves it, and it's so good. All the memes that go around on Facebook, that people are like, oh yeah, look at this, deadly. Yeah. And it's like, it's really good. It's actually a very surreptitious, you know, e-passport, whatever signature thing.
Yes.
But it works. It's cool.
It's really... And I wonder if it can be... If something that good can be accidental, because I asked the customs woman on my way back through. It's like, whoa, I got it. And because I was with somebody else when we went through customs and they didn't have it. And I felt really...
Special.
I felt like, yes, somehow I felt like more part of more than a colony.
Mm.
That I was returning to something more than a colony. And then when she said that, no, that's your thing to denote, that it's
an
e-chip. I was like, oh, well, one day.
Yeah, and actually it can be one day because...
Because it's already there.
It's already there. And, you know, the amount of Aboriginal athletes who at international games get in trouble for running on field with the Aboriginal land rights flag, it just keeps increasing. And I think I am in a false sense of hope, potentially, that my generation, through the relationships I have with people like us, think similarly and dream similarly.
Is hope not always a false?
Of course. I'm only limited in my sense of what my generation is by the people that I associate with.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they had this huge debate in New Zealand recently to change the flag as a way of covering up while the government was signing away everything to TPP and trying to shirk responsibilities of the crown and become a republic, which also problematizes all of the financial and land-based and moral rights-based redress that the crown through the New Zealand government has entered into with particular Māori iwi in the Waitangi tribunal process. So it made me think, you know, and so then people were trying to, I think the one that they're most likely going with is like this fusion of the colors of Māori aesthetics and the colors of British aesthetics through the British Union Jack flag. Is this really, I'll show you a picture. Mm. So it's a chevron and a triangle that is red, and on one left top left triangle is blue and the other is black, I think. I think it's those three, and it's like the blue hill or something like that they call it, and then and everybody and like kind of they went through it was this fake democratic process where the government still approved, but anyone could put forward submissions, and of course they chose four dull ones, and then at the last minute they like allowed this fifth one to come in, which is this one which people like, and maybe it's been a setup the whole time, but I don't mind because the new flag I think is better than the old one. And I would love, but you know, the kind of some people could not conceive of the Māori flag, right, sovereignty flag, Tino Rangatiratanga flag being the flag of the country. Whereas I'm not that nationalistic that the Aboriginal land rights flag being the flag of Australia would bother me.
No.
I think it would be a really interesting thing. And I think, but then I think also for a lot of Aboriginal peoples, it'd be a question for them.
Yeah.
Because there's a kind of specificities coming through the colours palette.
Yes. And that's once again grouping them all as one people.
Exactly. Whereas there are tribe-specific flags. I remember seeing the Muruwari Nation flag a few weeks ago, and I was like, deadly, what's that?
Yeah.
Nice.
But then I think about this as well, and I think...
And what are flags when...
When there was... So at the moment, we've got Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander councils and boards and events and committees... Yep. And there was a time when Australia also was running Papua New Guinea.
Yeah,
and
until 1975.
And the people of Papua New Guinea were included in that list of indigenous peoples of the region that now we have claimed, but now no longer. So then, and so that is a huge question for me about, only because it's in contention about Torres Strait Islander people and our... And the only reason that they're still included that I know about is because Australia still claims ownership of the Torres Strait.
Yeah, and they have a regional council, but they don't have a lot of autonomy, and they want more autonomy. And there was a time when people were talking about separating. And also, Norfolk Island is a distinct island society with its own people who are the descendants of the Bounty mutineers and Tahitians. And they speak their own island Creole, and there's this very small population, but they're linked, they're the same families on Pitcairn Island, which is a British territory, and on Norfolk, and they had self-government until this year when New South Wales, or the federal government, revoked it, and they've been protesting about it ever since, because that now that means that anyone from New South Wales can go and live there.
See,
and
that, like,
that's not, like, you know, as in, and the like absolute invisibility that Norfolk Island has, other than as a tourist destination, is already permanent in this, or is already
in the current
really
psyche.
Current here. And then the Papua New Guinea aspect is really interesting because, from what I gather, many of the Australian, Anglo-Australian settler colonial families still live there and still run a whole lot of things. And
there's still quite strong mission culture,
huge
isn't
huge mission
there?
Culture still. And of course, the mining is run by Australia and mass corporations. Mm. The only, to my knowledge, the main reason that Papua New Guinea was able to attain independence from Australia in 1975, besides being an unwieldy large population of black people living under white Australia policy, larger than on mainland Australia, was because of the illegal Panguna mine in Bougainville, run by Rio Tinto, with British and Australian governmental approval, to the disapproval of the Rorovana people, on whose
stopped.
Sacred ceremonial and funerary grounds the whole mountain was dug out. They were moved, their village was moved, and the open pit mine, copper and manganese mine and gold mine was created. And that is, and that's fueled tens of thousands of deaths in the last 20 years, and it's likely to reopen under pressure from Rio Tinto in Australia and fuel again another war, because none of the proceeds were going to that island, to any of the people who are landowners or in Bougainville at all. It was all going to Port Moresby in Brisbane. And so that, so kind of like this, the wealth of Australia, even in comparison, the kind of, like, I don't know, like the kind of the wealth that we associate with Australia is not only are there Aboriginal people all around who've had their wages stolen and who were sold, kind of sold into slavery as domestic servants and as stockmen, but also there are the 60,000 islanders who were kidnapped and brought here from all these different archipelagos as slaves from 1863 to 1904 and then deported under the first act of the Federation of Australia. And their descent, and then also Aboriginal people ended up being deported and taken to whichever archipelago. They didn't really necessarily take people back to their archipelago of origin. when they were brought here as indentured slaves, grew up on the sugarcane plantation. So there's like the sugarcane, there's mining, there's like just general lack of wages, and it's like, it kind of brings back to discussion last night around memorials to whom and what kind of memory, and whether a physical monument is the same, like whether we all need physical monuments. And I was talking about an article I'd read by Emily Rakete, where when a body of water becomes contaminated with a dead body, then it becomes tapu, it becomes restricted for a time, not only for the body of water to reconstitute itself in terms of being clean, but also for the people to have the mourning period that they need.
Yeah, and this is what I think about part of the, when we talk about the benefits that we reap by living in colonial Australia. Part of that benefit is the homogenization of it.
Yeah.
There's a super large continent that I am legally free to go wherever I want, until recently, when now some people were given the right to refuse people on their land. Yeah. But I really wonder what, and that like the wealth of states like Perth and New South Wales gets put back into medical facilities in Darwin.
Totally. The Northern Territory is subsidised to tilt.
Yeah, completely. And so I have shorter waiting times than anywhere else in Australia.
Yeah.
Thanks to the fact that it's united.
Yeah.
And the comfortability with its homogeneity. And there's not quite the level of infighting there is in somewhere like the United States.
Our model of federalism is quite different, and the population who came here from far away to set it up is not as heterogeneous as the population who set up the United States. In Canada, you know, like all of these religious minorities wanting their 2 cents.
Yeah.
Which is why they left Europe in the first place for most of them. But
so I think about
but there are the brethren and all of that around here too.
And then I think about even, and maybe you can shed light on this, even indigenous borders of country are also arbitrary and shifting over time.
They're for sure. They're like the Kainai people at the time of colonization by Europeans. I think they were fighting with other people and like extending their boundaries. I think it's like they shift, but it's not like a whole, I don't know, like it's all, most of the people I know are basing their land claims on the Tyndale maps, which are problematic as well, and on elders' memory of where their land ends. And so of course you're going to have fighting, and it's between cousins, it's between clan groups that are related to other clan groups, and it's between all of these different identifications and kinship structures that were lumped all together and split up across missions all across the country. So then there's this complication of the assimilationist drive that permanently tried to permanently undo this, the connections between peoples and places. So I think it's not, I guess it's like, it's not up to us.
No.
And I don't think that's what you're saying at all, but to work out what those boundaries should be or could be, it's up to communities. And as they shift, as things change, as descendants of one group come into visibility again and then claim this peninsula, and the other group had claimed it first, but that's also human. That's humanity.
Yes.
That's human endeavor.
And to just place myself as an ancestor of a colonist, I guess.
Descendant.
Yes. I feel like I have a part of Australia that is my home. And I can't imagine how I could consider traditional opinions about splitting up of country and who gets to be where and under what circumstance and how I could respectfully have a voice, because I don't want to disrespect or undermine, and I don't expect to have an equal voice, but I also don't have any other home to fight for.
I think that's like the worst nightmare of people, and the shock value.
Yes, it is.
That created native title legislation when the potential for land rights existed, that people were so scared of losing their stations, and it's like, really, people just want some land base. And the descendants of Aboriginal peoples who have survived or had survived at that point in the 80s are not enough to take all of your land. You know, it's not actually about having it all back, because they know that it's theirs culturally, spiritually, and that it is, and that they are its,
yes,
that they belong.
I wonder
But it's about a land base from which to be a self-sustaining community. And I've thought often about ways of setting up a land fund, and say for all of Port Melbourne as a suburb and a land tract to be bought up, and for the Bunurong Foundation and all Bunurong community to run it and to be able to live there, and like whether they want to live in a reserve kind of situation or just have a space to go to, because currently there is nowhere.
Mm.
And the Wurundjeri, the same. They have this tiny, measly section of the original, much larger Corindoke Mission, which they have in one family's name, and they have the building where the Wurundjeri Land Council is, but they don't have a land base. And so when people complain about, you know, corporate elders and elders asking too much for welcomes to country and things, it's like, what, like, if native title exists and all you can do is do a welcome to country and get that, like, fake genuine binary reaction from a group when they receive you, and depending on what you say, like, that's actually an economic system. Welcomes to country are an economic system.
Yeah.
And that is something valuable economically, where an elder is supporting many, many people in the absence of having farmland, in the absence of being able to hunt because it's a national park, because the greenies think they're better, think they know what, which is also some another form of continuing colonization, that the, you know, like the conservationists, that there's this wilderness idea, it's still based on this wilderness idea. Every stretch of this planet, of this country and of this planet, is inhabited. We're not the only things here. And if we ever get to having earth-centered epistemologies, it'll be amazing.
Mm.
The way that a lot of indigenous cultures do. And cultures that are indigenous today. Because what we were talking about the other day about, like, the zodiac and other forms of ancient British Isles cultures, Celtic cultures, that still resonate. And I think the zodiac and numerology are huge, but there are many other things, like witches and covens and other forms of healing and ways of knowing and connecting. What do you think about, I guess, like, I like to say, acknowledge where I've lived and where I live, and the main reason why I stay in Melbourne is because I feel like I have a relationship to Bunjil and to Wa, and to know who I, under whose guise I'm living, and the relationship that I have been privileged to build with a few elders and community members who are landowners there, and also who are not, who are diasporic Aboriginal people living in Melbourne, who form the community, amongst all the, like, other islanders and the Aadis and whoever, all these communities that we all intersect in and without. And I'm more comfortable saying that I live in Melbourne than saying I live in Australia. It's just like construct, southern land, south of where? And yet, like, it's a thing. It's on my passport, it's on my birth certificate. Well, state of Queensland is, but... don't want that.
I'm interested in the concept that we are reaping, that we are living in times of benefit that has come from displacement and genocide of peoples before us, being a part of citizenship ceremony to become Australian.
So true.
Because I don't think the conversation is black and white. I think, and it never has been, especially for the north of Australia.
Yeah.
Especially in Broome, especially in Darwin. Even, and before white people got here, it was not.
Yeah, with all of the Makassar.
Yeah, exactly.
I think as well with, in a kind of these porous borders where people from the south coast of Papua New Guinea would travel right through the Torres, Zenad Kes, and not the Torres Strait, the Zenad Kes into Cape York and all of the like in marrying and clan and kinship relationships that existed and still exist.
Mm.
But also in more recent times, the huge Chinese Papua New Guinean community who mostly live in Cairns and Brisbane, as well as in the islands still. And then a few of the community in Melbourne that I'm friends with, and it's like, this is a whole other, much quieter kind of experience, much quieter. And it you know, and that they were, the Chinese communities were sitting up the back with the Papuans of the cinema under white Australia policy when it extended to Papua and New Guinea territories.
Wow.
And that the European settlers were sitting at the front.
The front's the shit seats in the cinema, though.
<It's true. laughs>
That's the joke.
And all the hot...
Yeah, if you want to be cool making
kids,
out...
All the cool kids are at the back.
Exactly.
And I just found it really interesting when I was first meeting Papuan and European Papua New Guinean people living in Brisbane doing my undergrad degree, where the European islanders would, from Papua New Guinea, would speak English, and they spoke English between different cultural communities, but then amongst all of the Papuan peoples they speak Tok Pisin. And then the equivalent experience in Vanuatu is of simultaneous British and French colonizations throughout the archipelago. It's not like they split, you have that island, I'll have this island. It was everywhere. So families would send their kids to different schools, and so Creole is the language that everyone shares. There's a lot more emphasis on English today, but still about a third of the population is Francophone, educated, and two-thirds are English educated. And then there are 120 indigenous languages that overlay on top. They're really, you know, as like anywhere you find random or random to you, diasporas, there's like Filipino community, really strong Vietnamese community,
and
Walisian community, and New Caledonians, and Australians, and New Zealanders. And
for me to remember that their denotion as a Vietnamese community is also that name is arbitrary.
Yeah.
And those borders are arbitrary, and they are peoples of a region and of different generations through time.
Totally.
And I like to think about that in relationship to remember that the Italians, like the Romans, invaded and Catholicized the British Isles.
Yeah.
And it is the reason that my mother has a relationship with a singular male god in Australia.
Yeah.
And would the British Isles have become a colonizing force without having first been colonized by the Romans? Or if they were, would they have been a pagan based colonizing force? And could that have been a much more beautiful thing?
And could the Norse colony in North America 600 years before Columbus or something like that, of 300, had that been successful, you know, like this based on their culture?
Or it was successful because it didn't come over and imprint on top of what was there.
Exactly. Yeah. What is our notion of success?
Yeah.
I think also about, I just lost my train of thought.
don't know. But these are the things that I think about and reject. I reject my any notion that I am an Englishman.
Mm.
Because my genetics
are mixed.
Are not. So in some ways I believe that my genetic makeup, of course, is expressed, say, epigenetically in how I will react and respond and feel and engage, and the way that the environment will ask me to respond. But mostly it feels like a completely arbitrary relationship between genetics and culture.
Totally. I'm quite French acculturated by choice.
French acculturated?
French acculturated.
Uh-huh.
So if I have a croissant and a mug of coffee or a bowl of tea,
yeah,
I will dip it in. Mm. And like strange mannerisms, or not strange, French mannerisms that I have purposely picked up because I liked them, and things that are from Australia that I like, and things that are from Samoa that I like, and things, you know, it's like, and it's like this weird, you know, you get to mix and choose, and but this my genetics do not, like, of course, I'm like totally into like, like a lot of the work that I'm doing in terms of Samoan and other islander cultures, but and Persian cultures too, but Iranian cultures, but I'm not only that.
Yeah.
And like, so I kind of struggle wanting to define myself based on ethnicity and also not.
Yes.
And it's really interesting because in New Zealand, everybody defines themselves by ethnicity. It's just the way it is. And I think it, in terms of meetings where you recite your genealogy as a first step, I love that, and I really really respond to that. And I really,
it's also built into Samoan culture.
It is, like, and it's built into Māori culture and built into every Indigenous culture today that I know of. That you first present who you are, and not only to the people present, but to the ancestors and the spirits that are around you.
Uh-huh.
And that also establishes if you have any relations in the audience.
Yes.
And yeah, whether,
that's true.
Or whether you want to be related to anyone in the audience. I think it's just like I did a workshop, like a seminar in my uni cohort early in the first half of the year, and asked everyone to recite their genealogy, introducing themselves. And many people didn't. They just said their job was. And as in, like, I was trying to be specific to say your genealogy in introducing yourselves, and they would just introduce in this particular way. And like, okay, well, I need to work on this. Like,
this means industry has replaced genealogy and ethnicity as a
signifier
for identity.
Exactly. But then by saying artist, I'm believing in artism.
Tell me more about autism, though, because I...
Or, like, you know, as in, like, I don't want to just be... We also say that we're not our jobs. We make work, we do things.
Yeah.
But we're not defined by our work. But are we?
Yeah. I come from a culture that work is your definition.
Mm.
And my response to that was to choose or find or try to find a work that I would be okay with being my definition. You all right?
Yeah. Some soil on me. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Where you had room to move within it.
And where I felt that I could stand next to it and not have to excuse it.
It's definitely that.
What are other things that you've chosen? Cultural particularities that you haven't inherited through genealogy but have chosen to make part of your individual self?
The languages I speak that aren't Samoan. I guess I didn't have a choice in learning English. I was
no,
here.
A lot of the world doesn't. Or it seems like a good choice to learn it.
But by not having to choose it, by it being imposed on me, opened me up to wanting to learn French so that I could differentiate in a European knowledge system sense.
Yes, right.
Or I interpret that now is that it was also a way of surviving in rural Queensland and not being anywhere near Persian or Sign Language speakers. But like learning Spanish and still learning Spanish and learning Tokpisin and Bislama. I don't know, maybe I choose my politics, I guess.
Imagine if people in...
I choose where I live.
Yeah.
Choose how I dress, how I speak.
And then all of those are responses to systems.
And I don't really choose my sexuality, though.
This is interesting, isn't it?
It just...
Because we speak about genetics being not a decider for our cultural selves.
Or yes and no. Like, I guess, like, it's environmental.
Yeah, it is
environmental. As I... If you were adopted into my family and brought up as a Samoan child, you are Samoan.
And I would believe that I'm Samoan as well.
And you would know that you have genetically a different setup, but it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It does matter for some things, like land and... Well, not land, but, like, it matters to some people. But I think the way... In my understanding of the way that my ancestors lived, I don't count that as a thing. I met a young guy who was Russian, Jewish, and Polish, and was brought up in a Tongan family, and he felt like... He was, like, 19, and he was like, oh, I don't know, but all I know is Tongan culture. I'm like, you're Tongan. Don't listen to anybody else. You're Tongan.
Until you decide that you don't
want to be. If you are committed to that place, that's what you are. If you're committed to that group of human beings and other beings, that's who you are. It doesn't really matter. You know, and this is where this... The whole... bullshit treatment, absolutely heinous treatment of refugees trying to arrive here is so obscene. It's like they'd actually make incredible citizens, you idiots.
Yeah. Better citizens than you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is a strange thing. I think that though we've become acclimatized over time as a nation to different ethnic groups.
Mm.
And not even actually, but in appearance.
Yeah.
We become visually acclimatized to a Chinese face.
Yeah.
Only after we'd become visually acclimatized to an Italian or Greek face. And
In southeastern Australia, though. In the southern parts. Because in the north, there was always a lot more diversity than in the south. Even under white Australia policy.
Yeah. It's interesting that in Darwin still... people are in the industries that are the stereotypes of their ethnic backgrounds. Mm. Almost all of the concreters that I had ever met in Darwin are Greek.
Mm.
And there's huge Greek communities and social clubs, and a lot of the employment I had in any entertainment in Darwin was by a Filipino woman. And so there's like
an islander woman.
Yeah, it's a complete living out of stereotype, which is somehow the nice side of stereotype is that it comes from somewhere and it can be empowering.
Yeah, and maybe it's just a pattern.
Maybe it's just a pattern and
maybe
a result
it's like
of the
dark island parts of it, of what stereotypes are. Like stereotype as a printing press process is to copy.
Yeah. Well, this is also...
You know, from an imprint, so it's like...
A thing that I noticed when I was teaching breakdance in Tennant Creek and things like that, that I was teaching, and I didn't think about it at the time, of course, I realized that there were a lot of dark-skinned kids who were wearing T-shirts with dark-skinned people printed on them. But those dark-skinned people were Americans whose ancestors had been brought to from Africa.
Yeah.
But I didn't also make the connection at the time that I was teaching a form of dance that was American.
From that diaspora as well.
Yeah, from... Exactly. It never occurred to me that... And that those mannerisms exist within my body. And I feel like physical culture is one of the most pervasive.
And I've spoken about this with American artists and curator colleagues. where they talking about indigenous peoples and representation and visibility, where they, my supervisor said to me that her, for her culture, it's like the problem of, it's not the problem of trying to become visible, it's when you're too visible. And so much American popular cultural content is known the world over. So of course we have this kind of like level of fluency in their idiom, but they don't have anything in us. They have absolutely nothing in us. And it's what I wish, really wish for, like beautiful Australian television making. And for an film industry that was actually supported by the distribution networks, which are still run by American corporations, if we watched our films and told our stories. And it seems like the only thing that actually reaches is like these television shows, like the ones on ABC in the last while, like with a lot of Aboriginal characters in Sit and Redfern.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Yeah, like just really.
But of course, TV and moving image and sound across the internet as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is the medium of
our age. Medium of our age.
And so, why are we giving it over to people who are telling other people's stories?
But that's also a huge battleground for culture. It you know, this like at all costs dumb down the population. Never show, you know, incredible American cinema, only show shit that you can laugh at.
I burst out laughing in a shot of, so I went with my mates, one of my mates is really into comic books, and so this whole movietization of comic books recently, we go along, and there was a shot that kind of panned down, looking up at a Superman, this tall, white, buff man, and there were, everything else was destroyed except the facade of Wall Street and American flags blowing behind him. And I just burst into laughter, like, and it became a comedy to me.
Yeah.
And
how earnest it is. It's so ridiculous. Like,
and it was so, almost at the level of offensive when I visited New York. And I feel like people maybe don't notice that every train has an American flag. Every dump truck has an American flag.
It's so ingrained. And actually, the flag is so similar to the Chilean flag and, like, the Cuban flag and, like, every country, Puerto Rico, you know... No, not Puerto Rico. But all these other places. And it's like...
But I wonder if that's...
just a... like... And then when you talk to actual people... Like, I have a friend who moved here from Texas and... came through de facto with his girlfriend, who's Australian, was able to get permanent residency, and then he can access Medicare, and, you know, hopes to one day be able to have HECS and all this kind of stuff. It's like, you can't possibly dream of that stuff over there.
Hey, Jolly Swagman.
What's up?
That was really funny.
The discussion, the dance.
That discussion that we just had with our bodies was really funny.
Awesome.
Oh, it was so funny.
Awesome. Yeah, it was pretty nice to watch Gid have a little bust out at the end there.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you're recording.
Yeah, but...
I apologize.
Pause. I just pause.
It's gotten super rainy now.
Yeah, I think it's lunchtime, but I wonder if you have any... We were on track for a long time, and then we squiggled a bit more, I guess, to be personally considerate about how we're going to continue moving through the world.
I like that too.
Yeah, but I wonder if you have any closing thoughts.
Your listeners will like that. How many episodes have you done?
You'll probably be 54.
Fuck, that's tons, bro. Tons. I got some listening to do. Listen back on everybody. It's on iTunes, you said?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Wombatradio.com.au is the website you can go to, and then there's just click-throughs to everything you need. Like, usually I finish with the question is, what is your biggest hope? But I feel like you got to that before. And so I wonder, like, where do we go from here, maybe, is a better question, as individuals who are... I just like some of the bombs you dropped the other day about no that all peoples are Indigenous.
We are, aren't we?
Well, I would hope
so. Are we not?
Well,
you know, like the Eastern Rus-, the European Russians are Indigenous to that part of Russia. Mm. They just like colonize everyone else and continue to colonize everyone else all the way through. All the Siberian Inuit peoples and others and the Mongols and all the peoples in Georgia who they don't want to let have their own autonomy, the Chechens and everything. They keep trying to invade it. They used to keep trying to invade Iran, and then they did invade Afghanistan because then the British were at the south. And it's, you know, like it's everywhere. But we do have places. And the Persians aren't indigenous to Iran. The Persians come from the steppe. The Turks don't come from Turkey. They come from the steppe. There's like Central Asia. And then the Turks are claiming like some kind of like, well, not the Turks, like the AKP party and their supporters have like driven so much violence against the Kurds and other minorities because they're in the majority, but they're not. Like it's kind of this like falsification of indigeneity without using that term. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like in Australia where it's like, who gets to say who comes here? But we know that there's problems.
Maybe the where we go from here is to go back to our mate the poet and say that when you're visiting somebody, visit their home, visit their place, whether it's their apartment.
Exactly. I love that, like, not forgetting to... Like, I just cannot go to a friend's house without something in my hand.
Mm.
Like, I always bring chocolate or wine.
Whereas I want to set the precedent that my friends can always come without something. And so...
I want that too.
But then I need to go without something.
Yeah, yeah, and I just feel so awkward.
Yes.
And, like...
Go with a
and
hug.
Then, like, the Persian feeder go thing comes out. Or I'm like, oh my God, I didn't bring, like, rice. I didn't like, so I haven't invited so many friends. I haven't invited friends over for lunch or dinner for like 4, 5, 6 months because I've been really busy and because I don't want to do a shit job. I want to do a good job of a big like festive meal. Are you recording?
Yeah.
Maybe skip this bit. It's good, but like, you know.
I'm just thinking about how to be present not only now and not only as ourselves but all of the people and peoples we have come from and were and all of the people and peoples we will become and all of the lands that we have and will one day again be Indigenous to.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think about some of my cousins who are in the same like generational line as me, but who are older and have kids, who are mixed with other island and other European family-based families in New Zealand, and they're growing up with whatever kind of I don't even ever care about blood quantum, whatever kind of connection that they have to this place that they go on, they go to on holiday. That is like the land of their now great grandparent, or no, of their grandparent, where she was born, and so they're like third generation New Zealanders, and sometimes now it's like fourth, or sometimes you know longer, but there's still this attachment. But it's like what they use are the concepts. They don't do the husking of the coconut for the daily meals. They find that concept and use it in their work or in their practice or in their community life. But I guess I feel like there are always things like, how is it that throughout all of that intense Christianization of Celtic kingdoms and feudal societies, well, that's already like putting a valley judgment. Anyway, like any feudal, Celtic societies that that runes and tarot and the zodiac and reading of these things have survived. Clairvoyancy, like, that is this really ancient art form from this time when all of society revered these people instead of relegating them to be marginalized subjects and being like half quack, you know, like,
And yet we all want to know what our reading is.
I walked past someone getting their palm read a few days ago. And if I didn't know what the setup was and I couldn't read the sign, what it looked like is that there was a middle-aged woman who'd sat down in a chair and a middle-aged man was holding her hand and looking into her eyes and speaking with her.
Wow.
No, what?
Full image.
Who cares if it's full of shit?
Yeah. Or, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Who cares if it's a way of knowing something that we are no longer comfortable with?
Yeah, and like when I've... I think a lot of that stuff, like, I don't want to know the deep future.
You want to have hope.
I want to have hope and, like, maybe some sense of agency.
Yes.
And I think... I know we're doing a good job of what we're doing. We just need to enlist some more people. That we're not the only, like, it's horrendous. Like, the nuclear fallout of Fukushima and of testing on sites all around the world, and all of the radioactive material that will be radioactive for thousands of years to come. That I have no kind of, I can't even really get my head around it, and it just brings me great sorrow. There's a, and so like that's the kind of the most extreme example for me of human folly playing with things. And I do hope that the planet is able to survive us. Survive us as in to sustain us.
And to survive to us into a different us.
Yeah.
Further beyond us.
Yeah. And this is where science fiction comes in.
Yes, exactly. Let us imagine.
And like the work, I think the scariest part of that example for me is like I recently saw a major commission of, I think, 200 glass yams by Kogatha Nogunu artist Ioannis Gass in the Tanundi Festival in Adelaide at the Archive in Tandanyanga, Adelaide, at the Archive South Australia, and that commemorates all of the lives lost and the country that has been killed through nuclear fallout and through the Maralinga nuclear testing by the British in the 50s and 60s. And the British soldiers and the Fijian soldiers under British command who were working on that didn't have footwear enough to protect themselves.
They were just brushed off with the...
There were people, local people, who weren't told and who were never seen again. So there were Aboriginal deaths in that time through the nuclear tests. And every time I heard the curator... Nikki Cumston and the artist Ioannis Gass speak of that time, their experiences out there, they get so emotional that you also get emotional through empathy, saying that the country is actually dead. That like nowhere else on this planet can you go and feel nothing if you're attuned, or you stay long enough to feel something. But they couldn't feel like, and I, for me it was just like the worst possible reality. That there's a place where you can't at all feel the echo of past life, or life to be, or life right now. That it's just like not even tumbleweeds, and that there's no resonance. So I hope it's like a thing that will generations to come will look back at and be like, oh, they were so stupid, and like look at what amazing crystal palace we live in now, or whatever.
I think...
Which is, like, based under the water or some shit.
I hope that keeps happening. But then also we keep re-fucking ourselves. Like, we pushed hard against class systems.
Yeah.
And then we're falling back into class systems. And we're pushing hard... We are still pushing hard against gender...
Yeah.
Forcing people into genders. But who knows where we'll end up on that one. And
yeah, this, it's exciting. Like, there's so much work to be done.
Yeah.
I think it, like, gives you a measure of what? It's healthy to think of beyond us and not just be consumed by what we are and who we are right now and, like,
and constructing ourselves.
Oh my god, I gotta go to the pool and I wanna have ice cream and is that person cute and can I kiss them? You know, like, just the bigger things.
Yeah, and that the bigger things are made up of those things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Totally. Thanks, Lulu.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Thanks, OneBet Radio.